Hey everyone, we're going to get into the fantasy baseball talk in a few minutes, but before we begin, I wanted to tell you about the sponsor of today's show. I've been telling you about this new app. It's a DFS tool called Draft. They made DFS even more fun by setting up a snake drafts like the ones we do at the start of our season-long leagues. Last week, I was in this March Madness tournament one-on-one, single elimination, 64 players, six straight days. Unfortunately, I lost to one of the other fantasy pros riders in day two, but it was a blast, and it's time to check out Draft, guys. It only takes a few minutes to complete, like two or three I'm talking about. It's an absolute blast. You can play for free, play for real money. Your chances of winning on Draft are almost 200% better than your chance of winning playing salary cap daily fantasy. So join me on Draft for my next draft now. Just type in Draft in the App Store or Google Play. It's going to come up first. And be sure to enter the promo code FANTASYPROS when you sign up. You'll get a 100% deposit bonus. Again, that's Draft in the App Store. And be sure to enter the promo code FANTASYPROS, all one word. All right, on to some baseball. Welcome back to the Fantasy Bros Baseball Podcast. This week in baseball, Drew Pomeranz made a strong debut in his return from the DL, and JD Martinez started hitting again. I'm Bobby Sylvester, and today I'm joined by Michael Waterloo of RotoExperts.com to chat about this and plenty more. Hey, Michael, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, Bobby, no problem. Appreciate you having me.
It's our pleasure. So we've got to start by talking about Byron Buxton today. The Twins are batting him third. He's playing top-notch defense. And I was telling everyone this spring to pick him up, but he has 17 strikeouts and just two hits. Is he going to be sent back down to the minors?
You know, I really wouldn't be surprised. I try not to look too much into it at this point, because if this happened in July or June, we wouldn't be making too much of it, because players have cold streaks like that. But he's kind of making that his career now. I was with you in the offseason, especially after the September that Byron Buxton had. It was like, all right, you know, he's finally putting it all together. But
this is the guy we expected, right? He's going to steal 40 bases, hit 15 bombs.
Yeah, and those are the exact numbers, too, that I was thinking. And that's why I want owners to be careful with him. He's one of the most dropped players, and I totally get it. Don't get me wrong. I get it, but if I can, I want to hold on to him, because he still can hit those 15 bombs. He still can steal 40 bases. The Twins have been moving down the lineup. And I read a very interesting piece earlier on FanGraphs. And right now, he has a negative 59 WRC plus.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's just hilarious with his triple slash line of 0.069, 100, and 103. So it's just kind of laughable at this point, but you just really hope that he doesn't turn into that quad A player that so many players do, that they just can't make it once they get to the big leagues.
Reminds me of Brandon Wood with the Los Angeles Angels. Remember him hitting 45 homers in the minor leagues in AAA, yes. And he comes up and he does nothing his whole career.
Yeah, that's a good call. And as a Pirates fan, when Brandon Wood came to the Pirates, I'm like, oh, you know, here we go. He has his the prospect pedigree. He just needs a change of scenery. No, he just was never good. And I hope that doesn't happen to Byron Buxton. I've heard the comp thrown around of Cameron Maben for his career. And, you know, you really hope that isn't all he can be. I'm not ready to give up hope yet. But if he's still performing this way come July or August, you know, people might start calling him Byron Buxton instead of Buxton.
So. That's pretty good. Yeah, Cameron Maben was a former top five prospect, and man, he was a bust too. He's turning his career around, and Buxton is not looking good right now. I'll say this for Buxton, though. If he bats 240 the rest of the month, he'll bring his batting average up to 190, and that'll be higher than where Brian Dozier was last April. As we know, Brian Dozier hit 42 bombs. So I'm not saying Byron Buxton's going to have the same season as Dozier or anything like that. I'm just saying there's still hope. There's been plenty of guys who have had a slow April and turn it around. I don't think they're going to send him down. They're batting him third because they believe in him. He's playing great defense. Jason Hayward didn't lose his job when he was terrible last year. When you play good defense and have the pedigree of someone like Buxton, I think they're going to keep giving him a chance. I mean, the Twins aren't going to win now anyway.
Right. I mean, if the Twins are smart, that's, you know, I don't often use those that saying in a sentence, because they have a issue of developing players. But the last thing he needs is to go down to AAA. He's proved he can hit there and he can perform there. He needs to sink or swim at the major league level. And, I really hope Minnesota sticks with him and keeps him in the lineup. You talk about Jason Hayward last year with his defense. You talk about Brian Dozier, his teammate, and you also look at somebody like Anthony Rendon, who had a dreadful start to the year last year, and look what he ended up doing the rest of the season. He put together a very, very solid year.
You're right.
So 2 weeks, seven games, eight games, whatever it's been at this point for Buxton. You can't read too much into it, but you definitely have to have that caution with him right now, but try to hold on if you can.
Now, Michael, another former top prospect who had a miserable start was Tyler Glasnow, who walked five straight batters. Was this just a fluke bad game, or is he not ready for the big show?
It's an argument I was having with people all last year with him when they're like, let's get him up, let's get him up. Yeah, he's walking a lot, but he's striking out everybody. It's kind of the shiny toy syndrome. Everybody looks at it, they're like, okay, there's this new thing. We want to play with it. We want to see how he does. He's just not ready. The big thing at his size, the hardest thing for him to do is repeat his mechanics consistently. There's a guy named Tim Williams. He runs Pirates Prospects. It's the best Pirates information you can find out there on the web. And he's talked about this for the past 3-4 years with Glasnow. Is the main thing is that release point, especially whenever he's coming in at 6'8". It's really hard for those guys to be able to...
He's throwing from like 50 feet, basically.
Exactly, yeah. And he isn't that big of a guy. I mean, he's tall, but he weighs in about, what, 220, 225, somewhere around there. He just might not be developed enough to the point where his body is able to handle that either. So I personally don't think he's ready. If Drew Hutchison would have showed them anything in spring training except... well, Drew Hutchison numbers that we've come to expect with him, then I think Glasnow would have been down in Indy, but Drew Hutchison kind of forced the Pirates' hands to have Glasnow start in the rotation.
I feel terrible. I was telling everyone that I was starting Glasnow, wrote it in my article, and I was just like, man, this is a gimme. He's 4,400 on FanDuel. Like, how can you not play this guy? And, even if he doesn't get the win, he gets himself six strikeouts in five innings or something like that, gives up three runs. That's not a very good outing, but I mean, that's going to help you at 4,400. Then you have this dream team lineup. It didn't even get out of the second inning. It was unbelievable. And I told people I was going with a Pirate stack tonight. I'm just going to stop recommending Pirates players.
Yeah, that offense just seems pretty inept right now. And the pitching staff too is kind of him and Brandon Finnegan saying, okay, you'll walk this many, but watch how many I can walk. And they're just...
yeah,
kind of try to outdole each other there. It's just, it's process over results. Just like last night, you talk about Jared Weaver starting his first ever game at Coors. And of course, because baseball happens, Jared Weaver actually puts together a solid line in Coors Field. So it's all about the process over results, and you just take the hits as they come.
Isn't that amazing? That DFS slate was just incredible. You had Yoenis Cespedes hit three homers, a bunch of other guys go for 50-plus points, which is usually better than the best night on the DFS slate. There were like four guys who did that, and so I had like five or six home runs hit. I thought I was going to be dominating. I look at the scoreboard, and I'm like buried down there because everybody had Cespedes, and it was just baseball is crazy some nights, man.
It really is. You can't predict baseball, they say, and there you go. The only thing you can't predict, I guess, is Yoenis Cespedes against Clay Buchholz. And I guess everybody did that pretty well.
Now, some good news. JD Martinez has been taking swings. He's set to return here in a few weeks. Should we expect the same old JD that we saw at the end of last season? Or do you think it's going to take some time for him to bounce back?
It's going to be something that lingers all year, I'm afraid. Foot injuries are very, very scary. They're up there with hamstrings as far as lingering. And they're up there with shoulders as far as the biggest injury that I worry about when it comes to any baseball player. We've seen shoulder injuries hurt so many different players, and you look at foot injuries last year with Albert Pujols. It's something he suffered with the entire year. Now Martinez is much younger than Pujols is, but it doesn't change the fact that one misstep coming out of the batter's box, rounding the base, going after a fly ball, planting, that could just put Martinez back on the shelf, and you can't really DH him with V-Mart there. There's nowhere to play him. You can't really put Miggy back at third base with Castellanos, and just Miggy at his age right now, you can't move him from first base. I'm still trying to buy in on JD Martinez. I was really high on him coming into the season. My bold predictions article, I wrote a bold prediction for every play, for every team within the league from a fantasy perspective. And I had JD Martinez winning the Triple Crown. Obviously, very bold prediction. You don't expect that to happen, but
that is so funny. I mentioned that in the preseason that that was a possibility. That is so funny that you say that. What are the chances?
Great minds, my friend. Great minds.
Yeah. It's just, there you go.
If you piece together his seasons, the numbers are there. And like, if you look hard enough, you can see it happening. But the big thing with him has been injuries. And we're kind of seeing that again this year. So I am going to kind of put in some offers if any owners are afraid of him. But I don't want to actually pay market value just because I tend to be risk averse when it comes to injuries and especially foot injuries.
I like that you put in trade offers like that, because I was watching some video about don't be that guy for fantasy football. And one of those guys was me, the guy who makes so many trade offers. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm just feeling it out. You know what I mean? I'm trying to find a good value and see who's low on someone. Like, what's wrong with being that guy?
Yeah. I don't think anything at all. That's part of the fun of fantasy. First off is those offers. And you know what, if you get him any bombs, who cares? You know, it's worth the chance. You're not going to win if you don't make the deals. You're not going to win if you don't play the waiver wire. If you're too complacent, you know, you're just playing to have fun, which is totally fine. But if you want to win, you have to take those chances.
Now, one player who bounced back strong from his stint on the DL was Drew Pomeranz. If you knew before the draft what you know now about Pomeranz, how much higher would you have drafted him? Or is he? Did this one start not change your perspective much?
I don't tend to put a lot of stock into one start from anybody, but I actually had him around my 55th starting pitcher, I believe, before the season. I kind of moved him down a little bit once the news came that, first off, he might be a bullpen guy, which I didn't really buy, but I took that into consideration when I was ranking him, but also he wouldn't be ready for the start of the season. Pomeranz was excellent yesterday. There are a lot of pitchers on the waiver wire that people are debating. Is now the time to add them? Can I really believe what they're doing? Somebody like Kendall Graveman, you're like, okay, is this legit? Somebody like Matt Boyd, who had a nice bounce back start. But unlike those guys, Drew Pomeranz is a guy who should be owned in the majority of leagues for years.
He's already done it. I mean, they traded a lot for him.
Yeah. I mean, they really did. They traded Anderson Espinosa, which people gave the nickname Baby Pedro too, because he was just that dominant. And that's one of the big turnarounds for the Padres, who, you know, they kind of didn't really disclose everything they should have about Pomeranz's health to the Red Sox when they made that deal. But that's a whole other story for another podcast. But I take that in consideration when I look at what Pomeranz did after he went to Boston. Was it the innings limits? Was it the maximum innings that he's ever thrown in a season? Was it health? Was it a lefty in Fenway, which we know they haven't always performed well? But yeah, I'm definitely happy with what I saw from Pomeranz, and I want to try to get my hands on him. If anybody's trying to sell him high, I'm willing to buy high on him.
Interesting. I don't like never buy high on anyone, but I'm feeling Drew Pomeranz after that start. He looked really good. He looked like the Drew Pomeranz we knew last spring, and that was a great pitcher.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't agree more with you. I don't really want to base it off of one start. It was just kind of promising to see him come out and come out of it healthy. That's the big thing I wanted to see. And if you wait too long, then you're not going to be able to get him, because the owner is going to be the fantasy owner that has Pomeranz is going to realize, okay, he is healthy. He's good to go. I'm going to hold on to this guy. But he might be looking at him now like, okay, this is an injury risk. He kind of underperformed when he went to Boston. Maybe I'll see what I can get for him right now. And yeah, I'm more than okay trying to make a trade off for him.
Now, Michael, also over in the AL East, Gary Sanchez is now going to be out for 4 weeks. And it doesn't really matter. Fantasy owners are probably relieved, because he looked a lot like Byron Buxton before he went down. So my question for you is, over or under 100 on his ADP next spring?
Oh man, that's a really, really good number. I am going to say he will be a top 100 player drafted. It will be around the 90th player overall, I would say.
Okay. Because this year he went 75.
Yeah.
I actually had him right down at 130, and I was the lowest expert of anybody on Gary Sanchez, and I'm feeling pretty good about that one now. It kind of cancels out my Byron Buxton one. Probably not enough to cancel that out, but I do not think Gary Sanchez is a great major league player. I think he's a mediocre catcher, and I am so glad at this point I drafted Salvador Perez in virtually every single league.
Well, I mean, Salvador Perez is doing his best Gary Sanchez impression of 2016, just hitting bombs almost every day, it seems like. But I'm a Sanchez fan. I knew the regression was coming. I still think probably next to Evan Gattis, he has the most pure power at the position. I still think Sanchez leads the position in home runs by the end of the year.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I think he's probably going to be drafted right around that 90, 100 spot next season. We'll see what happens. I don't know. I think that him and Aaron Judge are two of the most overrated players in baseball right now.
Yeah.
They just both strike out so much, and the Yankees hype up their young players just way more than anybody else. I don't know if it's the Yankees hyping them up or if it's just fun to have exciting Yankees players and so SportsCenter does it or whatever, but I'm just not seeing it with these guys. I mean, yeah, they both have a lot of raw power. Sanchez looked great in the second half last year. Aaron Judge has looked pretty good in batting practice a couple times, but he's never showed power. Are you a believer in Aaron Judge?
I'm not at all, and I feel bad saying that because I went to his the season opener last year in Wilkes-Barre Scranton, and I talked to him before the game a little bit and asked him about kind of his approach, and he said, I'm just trying to make contact. Yes, I can hit home runs, but I'm trying to become a better overall hitter, and he's one of the nicest guys I've ever spoken to. But I'm just not a believer in it, and his small sample size in the major leagues kind of backs that up. My bold prediction for the Yankees was Aaron Judge was going to be back in the minors for good at the end of May, and I'm sticking to that. He hit another homer on Wednesday, but his swing I just do not trust. Same with Clint Frazier, he has a hole in his swing too. I don't really think either are going to be good, solid major league players. I would definitely take Greg Bird, Gary Sanchez over them, and obviously Gleyber Torres.
Man, they've got some nice players coming up. I'm a big believer in Clint Frazier. He reminds me of a young Gary Sheffield. Now, obviously, Gary Sheffield was not redheaded with a bunch of freckles, but Clint Frazier, man, has lightning bat speed. I think that'll make up for the holes in his swing. I think he'll put it together. And look, I'm not saying Aaron Judge's career is over or anything like that, but he's far from polished. He has a long way to go. And he struck out so many times last year. I hope he gets it together, but I just don't think it's happening this season. In fact, I have a friendly bet with a friend that Aaron Judge, I said he'll be sent back down to the minors. He said he'll be an all-star. So really, I'm really not buying that. There's a lot of hype around this kid.
Yeah. I'm definitely taking your side on that there, going down to the minors. I just don't see how it happens. The one thing you have to look at is most people don't think the Yankees are going to be competing this year. So what do they have to lose? And besides him, like, just make him show that he doesn't belong there. If I'm running the organization, I put Aaron Hicks out there just because he's better defensively, but the Yankees aren't competing, so I guess let the kid play and see what he can do.
If I'm the Yankees organization, if I'm any organization, I'm signing Barry Bonds right now. I don't care if he's like 50 years old. I guarantee that guy can still hit, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He definitely could. He put on a show last year when he was the hitting coach for the Marlins, and he was still hitting over the fence pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean, he'd sign for like league minimum price too. I don't care if he's a cancer to my clubhouse. I'll take someone who's going to bat 280 with 30 home runs, and I guarantee Barry Bonds could still do that.
And he'll probably set walk records again too, because no pitcher, no pitcher half his age or a third of his age even, I don't even know how old Barry Bonds is going to want to get shown up by him and get taken deep. So yeah, he might just be pitched around the whole time anyway.
Now, Michael, somebody who's been doing his own Barry Bonds impression, George Springer, has been on fire. I was downplaying the hype on him all spring, and he is making me eat crow. He has more leadoff homers this season in like 2 weeks than the Reds have as a team the past 4 years combined.
Yeah, that's I was kind of with you. I was kind of poo-pooing Springer too, kind of saying, you know, he is what he is at this point. If you want a cheaper version of George Springer, just wait till Jackie Bradley Jr. in the 9th or 10th round. And right now it's, you know, I don't like to overreact, but you know, I'm kind of eating that crow too, and it's not tasting too good, I can tell you that.
He's like the best player ever, isn't he?
Yeah. he seems to be that way right now. And I think he actually set the record for most leadoff homers for the Astros in one season. He did in the first 9 games, too. So he's breaking all kind of records right now in Houston.
Now, there was a big TV special on Shohei Ohtani, the superstar over in Japan, 22-year-old starting pitcher and power hitter, where he implied that the cap wouldn't stop him from coming over to the majors. He really wants to pitch against Bryce Harper. This is exciting. Do you consider him the best prospect in baseball?
Uh, for our big baseball launch that we did for Roto Experts this year, I had him as my number three overall prospect. That was behind Benintendi and Yoan Moncada. And that was with the caveat that Ohtani was going to arrive in 2019. With him being in 2018, I have him as my number one overall prospect.
I moved him up to number one when Alex Reyes went down with the injury. I had Reyes number one. And man, Ohtani looks great. Do you think they're actually going to give him a chance to hit? I sure hope so.
I really, really, really hope so. I just think it'd be great for the game. It would just be very exciting, just because we get excited now when we see Madison Bumgarner go out there and do it, which, yeah, it's great because he's a pitcher. When you actually look at his numbers, he's basically a major league average hitter. But because he's a pitcher, it's great. When you have somebody like Ohtani doing it, it's really going to turn heads and just make all the news. It'll be great for a sport that has real issues marketing its stars. They could really, really have a big star there in Ohtani.
Yeah, he could be the biggest star in baseball. The year that he comes over as a rookie, if he's a superstar hitter and pitcher, and really, he's good enough to be. I'm not sure if he'll be a superstar, but I guarantee if he comes over as a 23-year-old, he'll be about the same as Jay Bruce or better at the plate. And he'll be, what, Noah Syndergaard pitcher?
Yeah, yeah. And tell me an organization in baseball that wouldn't love to have a player like that. It would just be insane. It'd be an embarrassment of riches. And if I'm any team, I am emptying the pocketbook and doing whatever I can to get him on my team.
So, Michael, who would you rather have 2 years from now if you could sign one of these guys? Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, Manny Machado, or Shohei Ohtani?
Oh, man. I'm still going Mike Trout. I really don't think, you know, I think he's in a tier of his own still. And then you can have the discussion after that. I'm still going to go Harper, Machado, and then Ohtani.
I'm wondering if one of these teams like the Phillies or the Braves or the Cardinals, who are making the most profit of any team in Major League Baseball, is just saving up so much money so they can buy two of these guys.
I could see that happening. And, you know, there have been rumors that, you know, Ohtani to the Cardinals could happen. It's same with Luis Robert. They've been linked to him too. So I don't think it's out of the question that they do land him.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, the Cardinals are saving all that money from losing their first round pick, and I don't think they're going to be able to get Robert because I think MLB is going to hold off on allowing him to sign until after July 2, at which point the Cardinals are penalized and are not allowed to sign someone for more than like $200,000. So I think he's going to end up going to the Astros or to the Padres or something like that. So that'll be a bummer for me as a Cardinals fan, but I'm sure hoping they get Ohtani. That would be huge.
Yeah, even as a Pirates fan, that'd be awesome just seeing him in the division, having a chance to actually watch him in person. So I know the Pirates aren't going to get him. They chickened out over Miguel Sano or a few $100,000. So if he can stay in the division,
that's a bummer. That would have really been helpful.
It was horrible. It was just heartbreaking for Pirates fans everywhere. And it was just kind of one of those, you just accept it going forward. It's not going to happen. So I'll keep him in the division so I can go watch him. I'll be fine with that.
So Willie Peralta has been awesome in his first two starts. I had to double check when I saw his stat line. Is this a sign of things to come, or is this just like a random two-start performance?
I do not care about Willie Peralta at all.
There's no chance I'm picking him up.
No, there's not at all. Let somebody else do it in your league. There are plenty of guys out there you can grab. Yes, he had a good second half to his season, but he's still basically just a fastball slider pitcher. He's living in the zone so much, like more than you want. He's upwards of almost 60% of his pitches are in the zone, mostly around the middle and up. And he's just not a guy I'm interested in at all. His velocity's fine, but we know Willie Peralta.
His mediocre stuff at best.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. He did do it in Toronto, so you kind of have to look at it. But unless you're in 15 team or NL only, I really don't want Willie Peralta. I think he'd be better off to be a closer, to be completely honest.
Yeah, that makes sense. Of course, he's like the best pitcher on the Brewers in the past 5 years, yeah. Since they lost to CC Sabathia and Zach Greinke. I mean, they just have nothing going on over there. I like their young lineup. I think it could really surprise a lot of people this year, but their rotation might be the worst in baseball.
Yeah, it really might be. The end of 2015 season, you had Taylor Youngman come out of nowhere. You're like, oh, maybe this will be somebody. Then you have Jimmy Nelson. You're like, okay, lefties crush him, but maybe you can figure that out with this curveball. No, and then last year you have Junior Guerra, but you're like, how much will we really buy this with this 31-year-old journeyman? And he's on the shelf again. So Brewers fans are hoping and praying that Josh Hader turns out to be something. because they really, really need somebody in that rotation. If not, they are doomed for a while. I like what Milwaukee's doing with their rebuild, but they need the arms.
Agree.
Yeah, they definitely need the arms.
Everyone and their mom considers Andrew Benintendi to be the best rookie hitter. But who's the number two option for you, Michael? Is it maybe Dansby Swanson, Margot, Mitch Haniger, Hunter Renfro, or Josh Bell? Is it one of those guys?
Now, are you talking hitter as far as the hit skill? Are we talking fantasy player, the whole shebang?
Fantasy. I mean, the hit skill, I think everyone would agree, Joshua Bell. Mm-hmm. But for fantasy, which of these guys would you most rather own?
It's tough between Haniger, Renfro, and Margot. Everybody was on Swanson. Trust me, I think Swanson's going to be a great big league player, but better real life than for fantasy.
Agree. And
all offseason, I kept saying, now the rookie of the year is going to come from San Diego. Is it going to be Margot or is it going to be Renfro? And, you know, I think I'm going to go with Margot mainly because he has the speed. And I heard an interesting comp where somebody said, you know, he might have power out of nowhere, kind of like Francisco Lindor did, where you can't really figure out why it's there. You just enjoy it.
I'm starting to think that you're right. You know, I was down on Lindor when he came up, and I was thinking Margot was overrated as a fantasy prospect. He's never hit like 9 homers in a season. I don't think he's going to top 15 this year, but it's starting to look like I was wrong about him too. I mean, this is a guy who steals a lot of bags as well. I also like Andrew Tolles out of Los Angeles. He stole 62 bags in 120 games a couple years ago in the minors. He's consistently batted around 300. So I think his name's kind of in the conversation too. But I think you're right. It's one of these San Diego guys. And I like Hunter Renfro.
Yeah. I love Hunter Renfro's power that he has. I just think for fantasy, you might get more bang for your buck out of Margot just because the speed is so hard to find, especially if it's not empty steals. But another guy we mentioned is Mitch Haniger. And I love Mitch Haniger. I have a huge man crush on him. He kind of changed his approach to try to hit more fly balls, and it worked for him. And so far, you're seeing it this year, too. You'd like to see more contact at the plate because his strikeout rate is getting up there. And I find it really funny that on Yahoo yesterday, they kind of give you those little player notes. And his player notes was like, oh, for the first time this season, he didn't strike out in games. So that's kind of the issue you're having there. If he can't control that K rate that he has right now, it's 25.6, then you're looking at kind of a Steven Souza type player. But if he can, you know, he's really going to be a difference maker for fantasy. And I'd probably go Margot, Haniger, and Renfro if I had to right now.
Yeah, speaking of Steven Souza, last year I was a big believer in him. I picked him up in a few of my deep leagues this spring as a post-hype breakout. And he's had a fast start. Are you buying this as a breakout or is it a fluke?
You know, I feel like I get caught up on Steven Souza every year too, because there's so much there to like that you just want to like with him. But I don't know how much I'm buying it. The best part is it's a very, very small sample. What, about 35 plate appearances? He has a strikeout rate below 10%. Now, obviously, that's not going to stay. But he's been.
Ooh, that's not sustainable for him.
No, that's not sustainable at all. But like, if you look at his past few years, he's living up around 30% or so. But if he's able to just get that down in the high teens, 18 to even 21%, that can mean all the difference in the world between him hitting about 247 like he did last year to about 270. And then you're looking at a guy hitting 270. With 25 homer speed, and then 25 homer power, and then he can also steal about 18 bags too, and that's very, very valuable for fantasy. I'm not really crossing my fingers that happens, even though he did that in the low minors with his K rate. But yeah, I have him on my watch list right now. In 5 outfielder leagues, I'm definitely fine with him there. But in 3 outfielder leagues, I haven't been able to pull the trigger quite yet.
I'm picking him up in all my leagues right now. He reminds me of Will Myers, kind of a poor man's Will Myers, who, look, Will Myers was just not very good. And then all of a sudden he exploded. Steven Souza has the same type of tools. Now, he wasn't a former top 10 prospect like Myers, but he has the same type of skill set. And I could see him busting out this year and having that 25-20 season with a 270 batting average like you talked about. I think he can sustain that.
Yeah, that's not a bad comparison at all. Like you said, he doesn't have quite the pedigree that Will Myers did. But yeah, I can definitely see that happening. It's all about his approach to the plate and if he's able to lower that K rate.
Now, another outfielder that started off blazing, Nomar Mazara, once again, just like last year, but do you think he can sustain it for a full season, or is he going to fade again?
You know, unlike Steven Souza, I think Mazara can, because he was one of the top prospects in all of baseball. They had an embarrassment of riches.
He is so young, too.
Yeah, he is only, 21, 22 years old? And it's just, I wouldn't be surprised at all if we're talking about Nomar Mazara as a player goes in the top five or six rounds next year. He has that kind of talent. He is so, so, so good. But that being said, the big issue with Nomar Mazara is that he isn't that good against lefties. This year, it's a small sample size, but he's hitting .333 against lefties. But the big struggles for him came last year whenever he had to face southpaws. And I'll pull up the numbers real quick here. He hit .234 against them. So that's really the big...
560 OPS, too.
Yeah, 560 OPS. And that's really the big issue with him. I hope that Texas and Jeff Bannister gives him a chance to show them that he can't hit lefties. And it's not a kind of a Michael Conforto thing where, oh, he struggled for a little bit. So the rest of his career, he's going to be the strong side of platoon and never get a chance against lefties. I think Mazara has the skills at the plate that he can succeed against lefties if given the chance. And I think it's for real. I talked earlier about buying high on somebody. And I think Nomar Mazara is another guy that if people want to sell him high, go ahead and call me, because I'm more than willing to pay the price for him.
You know, Ryan Howard was really bad against lefties too, and he competed for some MVPs. I think Nomar Mazara is eventually going to be a perennial MVP candidate. I'm not sure if he'll ever win one, but I think he'll be one of those guys that's always up there, maybe knocking about 40 homers per season, batting about .290. This guy is a really good bat. He has a great future ahead of him.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree. I could see him kind of how Andrew McCutchen had that kind of stretch where he was always competing there. I can just see him being a top five contender for a good stretch. And again, the guy is 21. So we can't even say that he's a finished product yet. He advanced through the system pretty quickly. And he came up last year, I think, in the second week of the season. And he did enough to stay up there. He's not going to steal a lot of bases. That's the one thing that kind of sucks about his game. But he's definitely a player that I'm willing to buy, especially in dynasty leagues. I want to lock him up if I can. And even if he doesn't... If he doesn't keep this pace up all year, I'm going to buy in again next year and buy in again the year after that, because he just has that type of skill and that kind of pedigree that it's eventually all going to click and come together.
Now, Michael, before we get out of here, we've got two good questions from the listener mailbag. And if you guys are listening and you want to send in your questions for the next show, go ahead and tweet me at @BobbyFantasyPro. And we're going to get as many of these questions on here as we can. The first one comes to us from Mike in South Carolina. And he wants to know, if Mike Trout retired tomorrow, would he be in the Hall of Fame?
Oh, man, good question, Mike. I will first off start with saying I hate the Hall of Fame, just because I feel like it's the Hall of Really Good and not the Hall of Fame right now.
Agreed.
So it's very watered down. So by those standards, he'd be really close, but I'm going to say that he is not quite yet, even though his wins above replacement for his career is already something insane. Like, he's already top 250 player, top 300 player of all time, something like that with his WAR. But he needs to put together, for me at least, another 4 or 5 seasons of this pace. And then, I mean, because people are already talking, is Adrian Beltre a Hall of Famer? There's debate about that. There's debate. Oh, Felix right now, is Felix a Hall of Famer? And if you have to ask questions about those guys at this stage in their career, I'm not ready to give it to Mike Trout quite yet.
I think that's fair. I mean, I'm looking at Mike Trout. He's been top two in the MVP voting all 5 years of his career. But if you look at his counting stats, 170 homers, 926 hits, that's not going to cut it. He would not get my vote at this point.
Yeah. He's still, I mean, you talk about young with Nomar Mazara. It's hard to believe Mike Trout's only 25 years old. He has, you know, I think if I had to name probably my top two active players that I believe are going to be Hall of Famers, and if I had to bet my whole life savings on it, it would be Clayton Kershaw and Mike Trout. But if he said tomorrow, hey, I'm retiring, I'm going to go backpacking throughout Europe for the next 4 years, I'm not going to put him in.
Or what about if he decided to go play basketball? That's what the next question's about. Ed in Alabama mentioned that Tony Romo almost played in the NBA the other night, which is really a great story. Apparently, the NBA commissioner wouldn't let him play, but Mark Cuban wanted to get him on the court. That would have been awesome. I love stuff like that. Yeah. This is a great question, Ed. He wants to know what our starting five would be of MLB-only players in basketball.
Man, that's tough. Do you want to trade off pick by pick here, and we each can do our five, or you just want me to?
I've got a full lineup. I've got my lineup built, so it's my lineup against your lineup, Michael.
All right, I'll go ahead and go in blind then and just kind of build mine. I am going to go with Mike Trout. I think he's just a super freak, super athletic that you definitely have to have him on the court. He could dominate. And I'm also going to kind of cheat here and go with two players I know. I'm sure there are more, but two players I know that were former college basketball players, and that's Amir Garrett played for St. John's. I do know that. And I believe Chris Young, the pitcher, the old, tall Chris Young, I believe he played collegiate ball too. So I'm going to make him my center.
That's right. Chris Young played at Princeton. He was actually really good. He was getting looks from the NBA. I mean, he's 6'11". He was, I think, averaging a double-double, 3-plus assists, blocking a lot of shots.
Yeah.
That's just a good ball player.
Yeah, yeah. So, I think he can really help the team there, give some veteran leadership too. So definitely Chris Young, Mike Trout, Amir Garrett, and then we'll go with Matt Kemp too. He was a former prep star. I forget the publication he said it in, but he loves basketball. I want to say he said like that's his first love is basketball. So he's definitely going to be there too because he showed when he puts his mind to something. He got to Atlanta and he felt comfortable. So if you put him on the court, I think he'll feel at home. And then, you know, I need somebody to play point guard for me. Man, I can't think of anybody better because I really love those scrappy guys who get on the floor and lay it all out. I'm going to go with Dustin Pedroia as my point guard. I have no rhyme or reason for it outside of him being...
He's like 5'7", man. But you're right. He'd probably be locked down on defense.
Yeah, exactly. He would be locked down on defense. He would be like the Muggsy Bogues and the Earl Boykin of my team. And he would have so much heart and grit that... it would make Danny Woodhead jealous.
There were six guys I couldn't decide between, and I'll just say it. Joe Mauer didn't make the cut because he's a little bit older. I think earlier in his career, Joe Mauer would have been there. He was a really good high school basketball player as a point guard. Chris Young did make my team as my center. Mike Trout is my small forward. Matt Kemp is my power forward. Matt Kemp played for a powerhouse high school program. They won state 2 years, and Matt Kemp was a very good high school basketball player. My other two players that made my team were both superstars in high school as well. In fact, I think they both could have played in the pros if they would have chosen to. Adam Jones says his best sport was basketball, but he chose to play baseball anyway. And Adam Jones is a really good baseball player. So I would imagine if he played in the NBA and committed his life to it, he might have been an all-star. He could have been a very good basketball player. And then the other guy is Mookie Betts, who was an all-around great athlete, as you might imagine. I mean, just watch him play baseball. This guy could do anything in the world that he wanted. So he's my point guard, and that's my final five. It's interesting. We had a lot of crossover there.
Yeah, we really did. Kind of great minds again, I guess. We've seen that kind of happen a few times this episode with JD Martinez and now this. And I really wish I would have went with Mookie Betts instead of Dustin Pedroia. I instantly regret my decision, but I already signed him, so I'm just going to keep him in the lineup.
Well, Michael, that's all the questions we have for you today's show. Really appreciate you coming on. It was fun and looking forward to chatting with you.
Yeah, absolutely, Bobby. Thanks. I appreciate it.
For those of you guys listening at home, we've got one more show coming out this week. We're going to talk a little DFS. We're also going to hit some more questions from the listener mailbag and do some trivia. Make sure to tune in for that episode. Subscribe on iTunes if you haven't already. And thanks again to the sponsor of today's show, Draft. Thanks for listening and enjoy your baseball. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.